And welcome back. David Newell has worked with the Fred Rogers Company since September 1967, when production began on the very first national broadcast of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. He has served as Director of Public Relations for the Fred Rogers Company, but is probably best known as Mr. McFeely, the speedy delivery man in the neighborhood. David Newell joins me now on Cattlecast as part of our 20 for our 20th series. Hello, David, and welcome.
Hello and speedy delivery.
Great to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Mark. As you well know, it's our 50th anniversary, 50 years of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on public television. So I'm busy this year talking to people, letting them know all about what we're doing.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back a little bit and talk about how did you first meet Fred Rogers?
Well, it goes back. To, let's see, September of 1967. I was in Europe the summer of 1967 visiting my cousin who was in the Navy at the time, and I went over to tour Europe and on $5 a day, you could do it then, and spend some time with him. And to make a long story short, during that time, I had a telegram from a mutual friend of Fred Rogers and mine. And he said in his telegram that the neighborhood is going to go national. It was regional for about a year before that. But it was going to go national because Sears Roebuck Foundation gave money to do it. So, and he said in the telegram, and I set up a meeting with you, with Fred Rogers, when you get back. So I said, oh, fine. I didn't know what to expect, so I went in to meet Fred, and we talked for about an hour, I'd say, and he hired me.
Wow.
And during the interview, he was explaining what he wanted me to do. I went in as a production, to work as a production assistant and being in charge of the props and costumes and all of that, and I was hired for that. And he said, oh, by the way, I also would like you to do the part of the delivery man of the neighborhood. I'm going to open the program up a little bit, and we're going to add some cast members. And this way, I won't have to bring in props or things to show the children. You will have them delivered by you. And your name, that's what he said. And he said, and your name will be Mr. McCurdy. Hmm. And that was my name. So I got the job, and I thought I had a job for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then we it took us about 5 months to get a little backlog of programs. And the day we were going to tape, the phone rang, and it was the Sears Roebuck Foundation, and they said, everything's fine. We're just calling you to wish you well for your taping and so forth. And he said, oh, by the way, this is the president of the Sears Roebuck Foundation. He said, oh, by the way, could you not call the delivery man Mr. McCurdy? It looks like it's too self-serving. So Fred came back into the studio, and I was in my costume ready to go. He said, oh, we have to get you another name. And before he finished his sentence, he said, McFeely, that's your name. Your name will be Mr. McFeely, because that's his middle name.
That's right.
And so here I am, Mr. McFeely. That's sort of in a nutshell how I met Freddie. Hired me and renamed me as Mr. McFeely.
Yeah. Well, now there were close to 900 Mr. Rogers Neighborhoods made from 1968 to 2001. Tell us a little bit about the production of the show, how it worked and even evolved over the years.
Well, it evolved in the first 2 years were in black and white. No, the first year was black and white. We did 130 programs in black and white. And but we taped them sort of out of order. We would tape all of the neighborhood of make-believe segments first. Or maybe we do a month of those. Because we were ahead about a month, I guess. And we would tape all of those, and then we would take the set down to the neighborhood of Make Believe and put up the set of the interior and do those, the openings and closings. But even before all of that, we would go out and do the location segments where we'd visit a factory or maybe go see how something is made or grown or to a farm, whatever the location segments were. They were really done first. That gave us an idea of how much time we had for the program. And so we worked sort of from the inside out in a way. And then they would be edited and then sent to PBS, and they aired them from the Washington, D.C. Distribution Center. So it was, and sometimes we may have done three or four of the visits to factories first. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd sprinkle them in where we needed them. But we knew where we needed them. Fred, of course, would write all the scripts. I guess, to give you a better sense, Fred would start with the scripts. And I would be doing collecting props and so forth for those scripts. And then when we ready the tape, we do the locations. And then we come to the studio and do the neighborhood of make-believe.
Yeah.
And then we do the openings and closings another day. So the whole process took about a month to get about, maybe 3 weeks' worth of programming.
Okay.
And they would start airing, and then we just continue through the season. So our season of taping was, I'd say, from about September to the following May or June. And we'd have the summer off. Not off, we would work, but not taping. But Fred would go and write a year's worth of scripts in the summer.
Yeah.
And then we'd come back in September and the process would start again. We did that for years and years, and it was really a wonderful experience. And
well, now, you know, the neighborhood, you know, you welcomed so many guests over the years,
yes,
too. I mean,
yes.
Yo-Yo Ma, Julia Child, LeVar Burton. But one of the guests that I remember that you helped bring to the program was none other than the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz, Margaret Hamilton. Tell us
a little bit
about that experience and also the experience with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno from The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll start with Margaret Hamilton. You know, we had a lot of people would tell me, adults, that is, would tell me, boy, when I, that Wicked Witch and those monkeys scared me. Because they showed the program on network television once a year.
Right.
You know, it was a big special broadcast. And people were scared. They didn't bother me, so I didn't think that much about it until people started telling me. And also, Fred was doing a program. He wanted to do something about demystifying scary things for young children. I'm not talking about, you know, 14 or 15-year-olds. I'm talking about preschoolers
right. Who
are afraid of some scary things. They don't separate the fantasy and the reality. So Fred, through television, wanted to help them do that. So I said, you know, why don't we do a program about the Witch and the Wizard of Oz? And she's an actress, and she's still working, quite busy. At the time, she was doing Maxwell House coffee commercials,
mm-hmm.
as well as still doing character parts. And Fred said, well, if you can find her, I'll write the script. So I found her. I located her agent. She was on Broadway, doing a Broadway musical plus doing commercials. And so I located her, and he said, sure. He asked her, and it turned out her grandchildren watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And so I located her, and she came to do the segment, and she came in with the we had a facsimile costume made. It wasn't the actual one she used in the movie, but it looked just like it. And she showed children how she put the hat on and put the costume on and did her cackle. Didn't put the makeup on, the green makeup, but she explained that she was an actress, and that was her job. And we it's sort of very, very matter of fact, just explaining the costume and how she got into it and how she pretended that she was the witch.
Right.
And that was that was the sequence. But you know, we got letters afterwards saying how much families appreciated it because they were trying to tell their young children that, you know, this is Halloween, especially brings up a lot of scary images for young children. You know, 3-4 year olds when they're out. I remember our son when his first Halloween, we walked to the first door and the adults in that house dressed up to meet the kids, and the door opened and there was some sort of a scary image, and he ran to our house and wouldn't go out. That was his Halloween. After my wife made the costume and had them all, he got halfway. Well, he got one house done. That was it.
That was it, right?
That was it. So that's what really prompted that program in a way. Some experiences that we had with our children, but also stories that people would tell us. Did you ever see, you've seen that movie, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. It's still a classic to this day. Well,
bother you? Did the images as a kid, did you remember being scared or?
I suppose I was. I suppose a little bit. Sure. Yeah. Especially at a young age.
Yeah.
Like
I think some children are more than others.
Right.
And so that's why we did it. But it not only that, but it also was scary things in general. That
sure.
was one scary thing, but maybe if you showed that, that was symbolic of other ones too.
Sure.
That, maybe it would be helpful with.
Well, and similar concept with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno from The Incredible Hulk, right? That was the same
same
concept.
Had the same idea, except we took that one a little in a different way. I don't know. Our daughter that time was watching television one night when she was about 3 years old, and the Hulk was on broadcast television at that time around 8 o'clock at night, and she happened to see it. You know, she was not. She usually went to bed earlier, but some night, that night she up and she saw it by mistake. We didn't put her in front of the set, but she had nightmares as a result of seeing it. So I told Fred, you know, this is what happened, and, you know, superheroes are sometimes scary for young children, or we wanted to interpret them. We read a story, or I guess I read a story in the paper where a child jumped off a roof with a towel tied around his neck thinking that he could fly like Superman, that type of thing.
Right.
So we were going to demystify that again, and so we went to the Universal Studios, and Bill Bixby met us. He was directing the segment that day, and he invited us to come into the studio. During their lunch break, we talked to Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby, and Ferrigno was that segment that day. He was holding a plane up in the air as if he was trying to save it. And right. We showed that. We showed how the plane wasn't flying, that that Lou was not, you know, super. He couldn't lift a plane up in the air. But also, when Bill Bixby, as character, turned into the Hulk, he was very mad, and he would destroy things when he was mad. And Fred was using that as an example of showing that there are ways of dealing with your anger.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't destroy things, you don't hit somebody, but it was giving children alternative ways.
Right, right.
Of dealing with your anger.
Well, now
so all of that was in that segment. And then we were there 2 days, and one day we showed the children Lou getting into the makeup chair at Universal and getting the green paint put on his face and the wig and the false forehead and so forth. And he wore a nose, too, that they blended into with the makeup. And we broke that down, and it showed those pieces of rubber material that he put on his face. And it, again, it was in the same way that we showed Mark and Hamill demystifying that he was an actor. And
right.
He was showing getting into a costume. And also we dealt with the anger portion of it, too. So that was Fred's style, just by showing. You know, I think I, when we've talked before, I think I told the story of there's a saying of I think it's a Quaker saying that attitudes are caught, not taught, and I think Fred showed things, and children would catch it. You know, they would catch that. He wouldn't explain it. Say, now here's what you do. Do this. Do this. Do this. He would show it, and if you love doing something in front, children can tell. And if you love doing something in front of children, they'll catch it. And I think they knew Fred loved doing this program, and he loved writing the scripts to help families with young children.
Absolutely. Well, now, you often accompanied Fred Rogers when he would travel, you know, and guest on other talk shows, including with Johnny Carson and David Letterman. Tell us about the time that he met Eddie Murphy at NBC Studios in New York.
Oh, yes. Well, during the years, I started out working on the crew as a production assistant, getting things ready. Well, the next job I had on the program was that of a PR representative for the program. It's still doing Mr. McFeely, but I would be more in the PR end of it. So I had him on Letterman Show when Letterman was at NBC, and during the break from the show before we started a tape, they ran through a musical number. Fred was going to sing a song, and then they said, well, it'll be about an hour before we tape, and the floor manager came over to me and said, sort of whispered to me, he said, why don't you take Fred Rogers up to Studio 8H? It's Friday night, and they're rehearsing Saturday Night Live, and surprise Eddie Murphy, because everybody was aware they were doing that takeoff of Fred, that Eddie Murphy was doing the takeoff, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood, they called
right.
it. So we went up, and they were on a break. And Fred said, well, is Eddie Murphy around? And then I guess somebody said, oh, yeah, well, his dressing room's right over there. And Fred said, thanks. And he walked over, and I was right behind him, and he knocked on the door. And Eddie Murphy opened the door and was so surprised to see Fred. I think it's the last person he thought he would see.
Mm-hmm.
And then gave Fred a big hug and said, the real Mr. Robinson. And somebody ran and got a Polaroid camera. There were no cell phones then or computers. They got a Polaroid camera and someone took a picture of Eddie and Fred together. Only one picture in the world exists of them together, and I have it.
And that's, yes.
On a Polaroid.
Very
yeah,
cool.
You yourself have
made appearances around the country for many years. What are some of the questions or comments that you hear most often from fans of the Neighborhood?
Actually, after we did the Margaret Hamilton and the Hulk segment, that was often a question, saying that or thanking us for taking that on, and it said it really helped our family, and that's why I like going around and meeting families after an event. Maybe I would do a half hour show, and then afterwards I would sit down. Well, we did it at your library. I would do a show with some of the puppets and the Purple Panda and so
right.
forth.
Right. In fact, that very first time you came to the library was back in 2001, and I remember we had nearly 3,000 people at the downtown library that day. That was still one of the largest program we've ever had.
and we did the event at the auditorium. Isn't there an auditorium somewhere in the building?
Yes, that's right. We have that auditorium,
yeah, and,
right.
And I remember we had to do two shows. We filled up the auditorium once. We had to do a couple shows, I remember.
Yes.
Maybe three.
It was a...
But after each show, I'd sit somewhere. I can't remember where it was in the library. And anybody who wanted to stay and talk and have pictures taken and autographs signed, I would do that. And I loved... That's where you learn a lot, you know, as you... The question you ask is, what did they say? And they would ask about, so many different things, or comment on programs that we had already done, or ask a question about how the small children would say, well, where's Mr. Rogers?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, well, he couldn't come, but he sent me to bring some of the puppets and meet everybody, and that would be a question. Oh, there would be... questions from parents about, or suggestions, maybe, have you ever thought about doing a program about such and such, you know, giving us ideas. And, you know, a lot of the ideas from our programs, topics, came from the fan mail, the letters that would come in, or from people that we would meet, Fred maybe would meet somewhere, or I met in these appearances.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Well, as you mentioned, this is the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And
right.
One last question for you. What can you tell us about the upcoming theatrical films about Fred Rogers? There's the documentary that's due out this June and the Tom Hanks film that begins filming this fall.
Well, I can tell you more about the theatrical documentary because that's finished, and in fact, it's been released to some film festivals. It's playing at certain film festivals around the country. It opened at Sundance, and it sold out, and then played at the Northwest Film Festival, and apparently two shows sold out. And so it's doing the festival circuit first. Then it'll open in theaters June 8th, I believe. So I can tell you that is more about Fred's life and career and how he got started. I'm interviewed in it, as is his wife and some friends of his, and some of our staff and various people that he advisors and so forth. I wasn't there for every interview, so I don't know all of the interviews, but I know that they talked to some notable people too that were on the program. And it's really more about, I think, Fred's philosophy of life and his thoughts about children and maybe how he dealt with certain topics. And I think, I wasn't there for every interview, but that's the general tone of the theatrical documentary.
Right.
Now, that's not to be confused with the Tom Hanks movie that, as you said, won't be starting till the fall. I don't know too much about that, with the exception is, I think it will be part of his later life, because maybe 10 years before his death, there was a reporter that came from the Esquire magazine, that was it, and I got the first call as part of my job. I would react to calls coming in, and this reporter said he'd like to, his assignment, that is, was to come to the neighborhood and interview Fred and spend about a week with us, which he did. But I think he came with some sort of a cynicism. Yeah, I think, and maybe he didn't feel that was his, I don't know. He just came maybe begrudgingly, I guess that would be a word to use. And to make a long story short, during the whole week in his hours and hours of meeting with Fred and watching production and just absorbing what Fred was like, it changed his life. And apparently he, the author, had some troubles in his life, maybe with the marriage, or I don't know all the details, but that, I think, is the core of the film. Now, how they expand that, I don't know.
Well, we'll be but interested to watch it come together for sure.
Yeah. And so your listeners can probably expect to see that sometimes 2019, towards the end of the year. Maybe it'll be a holiday film or release it around Thanksgiving. Sometimes they'll release a film they've been working on with a name actor like Tom Hanks.
Absolutely.
Around the holiday season. So I don't. That's about all I know about that. But it is happening.
Well, congratulations on 50 years in the neighborhood. I certainly appreciate all of the time you've given to me and to Capital Area District Libraries with your appearances over the years. And it's always great fun to talk to you and to get a little news on the neighborhood, and especially this year on the 50th anniversary. So thank you so much for everything.
Well, thank you, Mark. And now I'm going to count to three, and we're both going to say speedy delivery, all right?
All right, that sounds good.
Here we go. One, two, three.
Speedy delivery. You can check out Fred Rogers' information, books, and more in our catalog at cadl.org. And for more information about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, visit their website at fredrogers.org. David Newell, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Mark. And again, speedy delivery. Happy 50th.